Hello and welcome. This is Couples Counseling for Parents, a show about couple relationships, how they work, why they don't, what you can do to fix what's broken.
Here are our parents,
our dad, Dr. Stephen Mitchell,
and our mom, Erin Mitchell.
Hello, and thanks for joining us today on Couples Counseling for Parents. I'm Dr. Stephen Mitchell.
And I'm Erin Mitchell.
On today's episode, we're going to talk about how you and your partner can stop fighting. Isn't that what everybody wants? I think so.
I think I'm curious what you mean by fighting.
So maybe you don't want that. Maybe you want to fight. Is that what you're saying?
I definitely don't. I don't know what that means. I think a lot of people define fighting. I think there's a big spectrum.
You want a definition. So this is what I am referring to, or we are referring to when we're talking about fighting. I think fighting, I would describe it as two partners that are dysregulated, going back and forth with one another, getting nowhere. So like a conflict that is not productive, a conflict that is just wrapped up in reactionary energy.
I think I want to come back to that. Mm-hmm. I think for the sake of clarity, it's always worth noting that we are never talking about situations of abuse.
That is absolutely true.
There's absolutely no physical fighting here. There's no verbal abuse,
violence, fighting.
And
none of that's
with words or with body. Yes. Right. So that is not what we're talking about. Right. And honestly, we never are. We are talking about couples who are making an effort to be healthy.
Yes.
Okay. So what you are saying, though, is fighting is purposeless. Because I think healthy
it's
conflict.
Dead end dialogue. Because you're both lost in that kind of dysregulated energy. So you aren't connecting your emotions to your rational mind and being able to express them in a healthy way.
Did you come up with dead end dialogue?
I you know what? I'm sure it's been said before, but I did just say that right now.
It's one of my favorite things because I think the reason that couples do want to stop dead end dialogue is because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
There's nothing more pointless than starting a conversation, you know, in air quotes, that you know isn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just.
Yeah. So what we're talking about is stopping the dead end dialogue and couples engaging in conflict, which is just a difference of experience or difference of opinion or difference of feeling or difference of thought in a way that brings you to a place of connection and understanding.
I love that. Ideally, efficiently.
Yes. Yes, because efficiently.
Yes. Yeah. I think I just enjoy that very much. I'm in.
Okay. I'm ready to. So that's what we're talking. So you're never not going to have conflict. And I think that all conflict is in a partnered relationship is an indication that something is important and that you're wanting to try and connect. A fight can sometimes be a result of that experience of feeling the difference and then engaging with each other in a way that is
unproductive,
not healthy.
Dead end. I'd like
So what we're talking about is how do you stop fighting, i.e. dead end dialogue? And I think that, you know, we honestly, like, this is just something we talk to couples about all the time and a conversation we even have a lot as a couple, like trying to shift out of a fight into a healthy conflict.
I think before you start the case mm-hmm. study, I think a lot of couples know some of theirs, even without having to go into
like some of their typical fights mm-hmm. or conflicts.
Well, yeah, like the conversation that you know is going to go nowhere,
right?
Or every time we've talked about this on the podcast before.
Go ahead.
When you've come home or when someone gets home with the groceries, and then you start asking me where I want you to put it all, that is.
I've done that before. I do admit.
Not once. You have. That has been a pattern. You probably will never. Well, now you do it to make me.
I think we've moved in some healthy conflict about that.
Yes, agreed. But that was something that would just go nowhere fast.
It was a
because
fight.
I couldn't figure out why it bothered me so much, and you really felt like you were trying to be helpful, and so you couldn't understand, and it just was bad.
Yeah.
But that, like, what are those places that
yeah, I mean,
get stuck or just ruffle your feathers?
Is it money? Is it in-laws? Is it, you know,
sex?
Yeah.
Sleep. Work.
Everything. Yeah.
Mental
division
load.
Of labor.
Yes.
Yeah. All these things that
how
come
you
up.
Make the bed or don't.
Right. You're just going to get back in the bed. There's no reason to make it.
I don't have anything to say right now.
I mean, that's how I think about it, obviously.
I know.
But so what might be like a practical example? So here's maybe an example of how a fight might start. Think about it for yourself and see what this would be like be in your couple relationship. But here's a little case example. We've got Greg and Rich, and they haven't really been on the same page in their relationship for about 6 months and just having trouble connecting. And most often this difference or this difficulty connecting becomes pretty obvious when they're dealing or talking about things with their six-year-old about related to their six-year-old son, Adam. And Greg, you know, typically does pick up from school, but he recently had a change in his work schedule, and Rich has had to adjust his work schedule and do school pickup. And so one day after Rich has picked up Adam and they get home from school, Greg comes into the house just like minutes later and asks, "Hey, what are we having for dinner?" And Rich quickly replies, "Oh, sure. I'll do school pickup and make a dinner plan since I've just been sitting around here at home with nothing to do." Greg bristles a bit and says, "You know what? It's not my fault my work schedule changed and yours is more flexible. I've been doing school pickup for the whole year until now. It's not my fault." Maybe you've had an experience like that, but that is oftentimes a scenario or kind of the spirit of the conversation that begins a fight, a dead-end dialogue for parenting partners, I would say.
Yes, sure. I feel it's relatable, definitely. And I think at the surface, it's piddly.
Yeah.
It seems so insignificant. It's so small. It's just a simple comment.
Mm-hmm.
What's for dinner? Greg may have been even thinking like, "I don't have a plan. Hopefully you do."
Right.
"I know I, you know, whatever, this is even supposed to be my night," or whatever. Whatever, it doesn't really matter. But it's just sort of like voicing something without thought about what that might mean to Rich. But it means something.
Strong response and then a strong response back. And I think how you could describe this pattern, the pattern of a dead-end dialogue often goes, someone leads with criticism and the other person responds with defensiveness. I think that is a recipe for a fight and for something that is not going anywhere in a partnered relationship. Leading with criticism, responding with defensiveness. And I think that, go ahead.
So I think that I love that because I think what is always helpful for couples, that's a strong way of saying it. Really, though, I do think that, but I'll just say most often anyway.
What often can be helpful.
What often, really, really, really often can be helpful is cues.
Yeah.
And so like if you are having a hard time wondering about what some of your situations like this might be, what are the things you feel critical of your partner about?
Mm-hmm.
What are the things you feel defensive about?
Yeah.
Those might be some ways to get you into this conversation because the worst time to have them is in real time.
It's happening. That's
the
very true.
Best time to have them is right now when you're talking about them.
Yeah.
I feel like I really am critical of you.
When you ask me where I should put the groceries.
Right? Yes. Yeah. That I feel really critical. And then, you know, I feel really defensive also when you come in.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Right.
I just think that those can be.
Yeah.
Things.
Criticism and defensiveness are the cues for like, oh, these are fights.
This is something.
Right.
What I don't know what it is about this, but like this is something important in an area we're needing some resolution in.
Yeah. And so then the question is, OK, so what's happening there? What's happening in that pattern that could be different and lead to a conflict that occurs in a healthy manner that can actually a conflict that can lead to connection,
right?
Is the question. And so we were talking about this a little bit and you mentioned, well, first of all, like you have to think about why you're like Rich has to think about why he's even feeling critical.
Well, so in terms of the like why, how couple relationships work, like, and ideally, right? Because how couple relationships ideally work is everyone is
aware, attuned.
Yes. And self-reflective. And I'm feeling stressed right now. And this is 5:15 and 5:15, all three, Adam, Rich, and Greg are all in transition, which transition heightens stress.
Yep.
And no one's their best in stress. So they're all like, it is the 5:15 hour.
Right.
I am in my stressed space. And when I'm stressed, I respond with criticism or defensiveness or, you know, dysregulation, or I'm beyond hungry or whatever. No one's thinking about that, though.
Right.
Ideally, we would be, and we would be self-aware and, you know.
And then ideally, you know, Greg would even hear that criticism, but would be able to, you know, be like, huh, interesting. So you mean
even if there was a dysregulated
Like, oh, wow, it seems like Rich is maybe having a tough day, or there's something important that Rich wants to say. I should inquire about that. And doesn't respond with the defensiveness. Yes, that would be great. And I think that ultimately, yes, that is the solution. That rather than leading with criticism and responding with defensiveness, you can lead with describing your experience, and you can respond with being curious. I think that's the solution, or the way that we're kind of going. So if you think about Rich, so Rich responds with criticism about how he feels about school pickup and being asked to do dinner. And apparently, maybe Rich hasn't really noted, like, he's feeling some energy about having to do school pickup and being asked about dinner, like, and he doesn't know what that's about.
Sure. And you know, if you really think about it, if you think about like the times of your day that this happens, maybe if it would have happened at breakfast when things had been calm, it wouldn't have been a thing.
Right.
Like maybe at breakfast, if Greg would have been like, hey, what should we do what's for dinner tonight? Rich might not have bristled or led with the criticism. But maybe it's the time of day. Maybe it isn't this huge thing to unpack, but maybe it is. Like it's hard to know, but it's important to figure out.
So hypothetically, let's think about Rich. So Rich, maybe in retrospect, Rich can say, you know what? I actually feel frustrated that I had to switch my work schedule to adjust to picking up Adam. And that was sort of the expectation. You know, Greg comes in and says, hey, I got this new work thing. I got to do this. You need to change your schedule so that we can pick up Adam. And maybe what is happening for Rich is he feels misunderstood in that. He feels sort of like Greg's world takes precedent. You know, whatever it might be, there's something about that. There's something behind the criticism that is speaking to a place of hurt, or a place of misunderstanding, or a place where Rich wants to be validated, seen, et cetera, et cetera.
I love that. I think a word that comes up over and over and over in this conversation is entitled. Mm-hmm. So like, could Greg have switched his work? Probably not. For the sake of example, we're just going to say no. Like this wasn't Greg's choice. Like Greg really can't do pickup anymore, and Rich really can. But the feeling is you're so entitled.
Yeah.
And because what is missed is you just know I'm going to be able to pick up the slack. You just use up my freedom. You take the liberty, you don't consider, and we don't even have that conversation.
Right.
That word entitled, if there is any area in your relationship where you feel like your partner is entitled, or you think your partner might think that about you, that's important. It's really one to really dig into the layers, because that divides so quickly.
Yeah. And so, you know, we were talking about cues. When you are feeling critical, when you're leading with criticism, that I think that can be a good cue to think about, hey, there's something happening for me. I feel like something about my experience is being missed.
Over and over and over, I think the two words that stand out are freedom and cost. Mm-hmm. I'm missing a freedom.
Right.
There, like you are taking some freedom of mine, or right. you are not seeing the cost.
Yeah, you don't understand. You don't mm-hmm. understand what it means for me to make this.
Yes, because just because Greg switch, couldn't yeah. change his work thing doesn't mean like, hey, this is really tough. This is a big yeah. shift. I'm, you know, like, let's talk about this. What's that going to be like for you? What's this going right. to cost you? Like, that means you're probably going to have to like take 30 minutes out of your lunch hour. Like, that's your break. And like, this is really tough. Like, I'm so sorry. This is the situation.
Right.
Doesn't
right.
mean Greg's to blame. But Greg can enter that in a way that can validate and support Rich.
Yeah.
Rather than dismiss the difficulty or the freedom and the cost.
Right. And so I think that, again, the way you get to that, though, is when Rich senses that criticism, it is part of Rich's kind of
when
process.
Rich senses that he's wanting to
that
be critical.
He's being, mm-hmm. that he's being critical. That is an opportunity for Rich to look within and say, hey, what is going on? Why am I feeling this way? And then from that, to then lead by sharing the experience with Greg. So, hey, you know what I'm noticing? I feel like I get that I am the one who can do, you know, school pickup, and I know that you can't, but I also feel like maybe you're missing that I've had to, you know, take 30 minutes out of my lunch break. I've had to make some sacrifices. It has cost me in a little different way.
You do need to acknowledge or validate.
Yeah, yeah. That. Like I feel like you're kind of missing that. And so when you come in and say, hey, what's for dinner? I feel like it's just doubling down on that and kind of saying, you know, saying like, yeah, you not only do you make this sacrifice here for school pickup, but also like, what's, you know, how about you make dinner too? And that's what's happening for me.
And a thing I know I have said, I don't know how relatable it is, but like, sure, I'm for you. Oh, that's right. I forget. I'm for picking up the kids. I'm for doing my job. Oh, yeah, and yeah. I'm also for making sure you get your dinner.
Right.
Sure. That's what I'm mm-hmm. for. Mm-hmm. I'm for you.
Right.
And you're for you. Everyone's for you.
Right.
And I think that is where people try not to feel that way. And I think rather than trying not to feel that way, just wonder, how did I come to be feeling this
right.
way?
Well, and you can describe that's how you feel without being critical, I think. Without attacking the other person.
And again, that's a whole lot easier when it's not in real
yeah.
time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Which ideally is what we're helping you do here.
Yeah. So ideally in this, you know, case, you know, Greg and Rich are going to have a conversation after the fact.
Absolutely.
But
also Adam's right there. He's right. home from school.
Right. But also what you hope is that if you practice having these conversations after the fact, you don't even get into those conversations in the first place.
Yes.
Because
they do build up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You feel the cue of criticism and you're like, huh. Criticism often means, man, there's something about my experience that I feel is getting missed. How can I describe that to my partner? I think on the flip side, so you know, let's say for Greg, Rich responds with that kind of critical, snappy response. I think Greg, on his end, rather than lead like responding with defensiveness, has the opportunity to respond with curiosity, respond by noticing, oh, interesting. Rich's response doesn't seem to match.
Reaction. What,
Rich yeah, reaction. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rich's reaction doesn't seem to match like where I was or what my question was or like even what I meant. That must mean, rather than being like, and I'm going to make them pay for it. Huh. That must mean there's something really important going on. I want to understand. I want to inquire about that, you know, mm-hmm. so that would be something like Greg being like, hey, whoa, like I totally see that question was not a great question or that touched a nerve. Like, can you help me understand? Like I'm missing something and I want to know what it is that I'm missing. And I think that curiosity can do a lot to temper that criticism. It's an invitation to the partner to describe their experience, even if they maybe missed it the first time. So Rich maybe missed describing his experience, but with Greg's curiosity, it's an invitation to say, oh no, like I want to hear it. Like, I'm not going to pay attention to the criticism. I'm going to pay attention to the message behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's something too that you're going to have to work out with you and your partner, because I tell you this, if Steven said to me when I was feeling activated, it seems I've touched a nerve.
Sure.
I'm not going to love that. But I do know that usually what in our situation, you get quiet and you sort of like physically usually move closer, or start doing something that will help, or, you know, just get near.
Definitely stop talking.
Yes. Yes. But, and then I start to think like, that was strong. And I do usually have to notice that on my own. Like, what is going on? Steven hasn't left. He is drawing near. He's not upset. He's not angry. He's not withdrawn. Okay. What's going on? And I think the opposite is true for you. Mm-hmm. When you are the one who snaps initially, when you lead with criticism, I usually can look at you and you appreciate when I'm like, that felt really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then back off. I don't like.
Yeah, that works for me. I'm okay with that.
You, yeah, that you like that. When I get quiet, then you don't usually notice.
Right.
But like, whoa.
Yeah. So again, the cues. You got to work it out for like what works for your couple relationship. But I do think that one of the things that's really important too is I do think that it takes a lot of mutual humility and graciousness to each other in the to do this.
Correct.
Because if you're critical towards me, like, you know, like I mean, I guess I could focus on the criticism, but what's going to be more productive, or what's actually going to help us resolve something, or what's going to help us connect, is to be curious in that way, and vice versa.
Well, we've all done that though, right? We've all focused on the criticism, and we've had a 45-minute conversation after the kids go to sleep about like the actual verbiage of the sentence of what's for dinner. And then at the end of it, no one feels better.
Right.
And it's like, well, this was an actual waste of the only time we were going to get to like do anything for ourselves and hang out with each other. So I think that's what's lost in that. That is the epitome for me, at least, of a dead end dialogue. Like, oh my goodness, such a waste of time, effort, energy, blood, sweat, and tears. Like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, most certainly. And I think, again, you know, oftentimes I think initially in this, you know, shifting this dead end dialogue, it's the conversations after the fact where you're recognizing, oh, I led with criticism. Oh, I responded with defensiveness. Huh. What was going on? Okay, this was my experience. Okay, I can be curious about that. Like that happens oftentimes after the fact.
But I do think it's important to even focus on what you said, or just maybe highlight, not focus, but it helps resolving these things.
Yes.
It stacks up just like small misses stack up.
Right.
So do small resolutions.
Yeah.
So that the next time it happens, like that question felt awful. And then it can be a little bit lighter and lighter until it's kind of funny when you walk in and say like, I mean, now it actually makes me laugh out loud when you're like, hey, so where do you want me to put this lettuce? Is this I'm like, oh, you know, like I get it. Like I feel really seen in it, honestly. And it's funny. And I think that's always the point, is trying to stack up. We know how to have healthy conflict.
Well, what happens is it becomes preventative. So
correct.
you learn how to have these conversations after the fact, and then it's preventative for future moments. And I think that, I think that's one of the things that, I would love to encourage couples, like in talking with, them, like where I alluded to, like, it takes a lot of like humility and like mutual graciousness to have this kind of conversation. I think it really does. And oftentimes, couples can get stuck in the fact that like, well, if I don't defend, or if I don't criticize, like if I don't dig in where I'm at, I'm going to lose and I'm not going to be understood. And I think the contrast to that is if you don't dig in, and if you engage this process of being vulnerable both ways, describing your experience, being vulnerable enough to be curious, vulnerable enough to describe your experience, it actually allows you both to feel more understood. And I think that that's a hard thing to convince, I think, couples of sometimes. It's something they just have to experience. So it's kind of like, try it out. And I think what you will experience is more moments of connection than disconnection.
I think what you're saying is being honest, but being honest about the layers.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I think a lot of people do try either just not to have fights.
Right.
Or they're fighting about the wrong thing. And either way, it's like, well, we tried that or we tried this.
Right.
Like, well, but that vulnerability piece is what you're talking about. That honesty piece, not just the, I'm frustrated you said that, but like when you say that, it actually, I hear this or.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you.
Moving towards.
Yes.
Moving towards yourself and moving towards your partner, not just dismissing self or dismissing partner.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and I think that, you know, it again, in this process, it takes both of you. It takes, you know, the partner who's felt critical, it takes them to be vulnerable, and the partner who's been defensive, it takes them to be curious. And I think that that is, you know, it's an effort for both of them. And that can be scary. I think it can be a scary process, but I think that, again, it's the pattern that will break those dead end dialogues and allow couples to have conflict that is healthy, productive, and also that ends and gets resolved.
Yes.
Which I think is something that we could all really, really want and enjoy in our relationship. Yeah.
Back to no one has time for the dead end dialogue. I'm too tired for that. Even if I wasn't, I wouldn't want it, but I am. I'm too tired for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what are the cues? In other words, when do you notice that you feel critical? When do you notice that you feel defensive? What are those cues of?
And then with some kindness and curiosity, some compassion, ask yourself those how questions. How did that come to be? Get curious about it and then talk about that. Mm-hmm. I think that is, those are the building blocks.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, and the talking about that is that part of leading with your experience and responding with curiosity. And guess what? You can be done with dead end dialogues. Wouldn't that be great? Today's show was produced by Aaron and Stephen Mitchell. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit the follow button and leave us a rating. This helps our content become more visible to others who might enjoy it, and it lets us know how we can keep improving the show. And as always, we're grateful for you listening. Thanks so much for being with us here today on Couples Counseling for Parents. And remember, working on a healthy couple relationship is good parenting.